I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm Russ Golden, host of Cottage Talk, a podcast about Fulham Football Club. You can follow me on Twitter at Russ_Goldman or at the Twitter account for the show, Cottage Talk.
I'm Jake, a Newcastle supporter. You can get me on Twitter at Jake Jackman with two N's, and I work for EPL Index and the Boot Room.
Hi, I'm Jay. I'm editor and founder of the Eagles Beak, a Palace fan site by fans for fans. You can get us on Twitter at the Eagles Beak. And I'm also co-host and producer of the Meridian Sports Show, which is a local community radio show, which you can get online. And you can follow us on Twitter at the Meridian SS.
All right, thanks so much for joining us today, guys. Absolute pleasure, as always. First up, let's talk a little bit, as I'm pretty sure every podcast is contractually obligated to. Start off by talking about Jose Mourinho. Not going to get into all of his quotes and antics and everything, but he did win their match today 2-0. A lot of the United fans saying that Mourinho really is uniting everyone, with a whole bunch of horrible puns to go in line with that. So all the antics aside, do you think Mourinho deserves more time at Manchester United?
Well, it's a very interesting thing because you can't listen to anything. I can't turn on SiriusXM FC without the lead being about Mourinho. So for me, it's been nonstop Mourinho. And there's a part of me that thinks that, again, he only has this time frame that it seems to work, Kevin, if you're asking me, 2 to 3 years and then everything goes bad. But this is Manchester United, and they expect the best of the best. If you're asking me if it's any other team, he deserves more time, but this is Manchester United, and I don't know if he's going to get any more time.
I think it's, you know, if you look at the way they played against Spurs, even the way they played against Leicester, and then, you know, it's just not been very good. And I just don't think it's been very good for like the last 12 months. They had that one good year, which I guess you could consider a good year, winning Europa League and the FA Cup. But since then, it's just been going downhill, and you have all the internal politics with Anthony Martial going on, and the fact that he seems close to signing a new contract suggests that Mourinho is not going to get much more time. The Pogba stuff as well, I think it's too far down the line for it to really be reversed. And I think it's coming to a head before Christmas. I think he's going to go. I don't know if there's anybody who's that obvious to come in to replace him. And I think if there was, he probably would have went already. The summer was probably the time to get rid of him, and they didn't. But it's just, he's just become a bit of a caricature of himself now. Like that stuff after the Tottenham game with the three, you know, he's won three titles, more than all the other 90 managers combined. I mean, yeah, that's true. But his last title did come, you know, with Chelsea. It didn't come with Manchester United, and it came, you know, a good, you know, 4 or 5 years ago now. It's not very recent. So I think it's time for him to go. I think he's probably, you know, the very top of the managerial game, he's probably left him behind. He could probably go and have success at maybe a second tier club or an international team. But I think Manchester United is too big for him at the moment. And they need to get a manager in like a Klopp, like a Guardiola, like a Pochettino. Somebody who's going to implement a style and plan for the long term, because that's not what Mourinho does. And the fact that he didn't get the money in the summer probably shows that the club is off faith in him. And the moment that happened, it's difficult to get back from a situation like that. And I don't think he's got the character to get back from it, because he's just so abrasive. He's only going to make it worse. I think today was a bit of a respite for him. I think Burnley are shocking at the moment, and I'd be surprised if any team would go and lose to Burnley at the moment. So I don't think it's a sign that he's going to turn around for him. I think the next game, Watford away, that's got a loss written all over it, given what Watford are doing at the moment, and that could be the end for him. And I wouldn't blame Man United to get rid of him now. I don't know who they get, but it's gone too far, Mourinho, and he needs to go. He's never got back from this situation before, so he's not going to do it now with Manchester United, when arguably it's worse than it's been at any other club, because these tensions have been there for a long time at United with Pogba and Martial and Shaw. You know, they've been there for over 12 months now, and they're only getting deeper. So yeah, he needs to go. And if he doesn't, that I can see them finishing. I don't see them as a top four club at the moment. So if he stays, they're not going to get top four. And without that, they're going to, you know, damage their brand once again. So I don't think they can do that. So yeah, he needs to go, and he needs to go pretty quickly.
Yeah, United, that position at United has been a poison chalice since Fergie left. Obviously, you know, managers have been and gone. They've still won, you know, the odd thing in between time. But it's just bizarre how Mourinho has kind of failed in a way, because I thought that was a role at a club that he would probably, excel in, really. But it's not really been a match made in heaven at all. I think that the writing was on the wall in the summer with the fact that they weren't giving him the money to actually spend on players. It was evident that they've needed something across the back line, and I think a lot of the rumours were about central defenders particularly, which is where they struggle, and it's kind of preventing them from, you know, actually having that kind of attacking team without any solid foundation in a back line. All the time they've got those frailties, and it's going to be difficult. But I think I really thought Mourinho was going to walk after the game on Monday with his quite bizarre walk off the pitch, you know, standing there in front of the United fans, clapping, well, whoever was left, to be honest. There wasn't many left in the stadium, but he was standing there clapping the United fans, which you don't see very often. I know he's a very fan-orientated manager, because every time he's come to Palace, he's applauded the atmosphere at Palace majority of the time, more so when he's at Chelsea and United. But he seems to have had a connection with some of the Palace fans, even though they seem to beat us every time. But that was quite peculiar. You know, he walked off with a United scarf, and I kind of thought, you know, that could have been the end after that beating by Spurs. I mean, it was a bold move to start the game on Monday, you know, three at the back with Herrera playing at the back. But I thought United, for the most part in that first half at least, had the chances and took the game to Spurs. And I think pretty counts as a little bit unlucky they didn't get the first goal in that one, which could have perhaps changed the game a fair bit. But yeah, it just seems to have gone sour. And it's kind of the time frame that's already been mentioned, that, you know, probably time for him to move on and go something a bit more of a fresh start. I think the point's already been made that he'd probably do a really good job at a lower level club with not quite so much of an expectation level as United. But, you know, I always fancied him to do well at a club like United. But unfortunately, it's not the case. And it seems to be, you know, a massive job at United since Fergie left. There's no doubt about it. They've kind of stumbled through seasons. Granted, they won the FA Cup and was it League Cup last year? But other than that, I don't really see who is out there who can come in and, you know, grab that club by the scruff of the neck and actually get it to win titles again, because it seems to be, you know, a lot of the things that we hear from the players and some of the rumblings from behind the scenes, it seems a little bit sort of, you know, stuck there at the moment. So interesting to see. I mean, people have mentioned Zidane. He did very well at Madrid, but Madrid is a club that he knew. I can't imagine.
And had a really much better squad than what he'd take over here.
Exactly. But I just don't see Zidane doing well at another club, really. Maybe I'm underestimating him. I thought he was perfect for Real Madrid, and so it proved. I'll be surprised if he actually goes and does another job, or is actually interested in another job. He's another Mar entirely. Yeah. But yeah, I don't really see who's going to come in and do a better job. There's obviously somebody out there that, but maybe they might need to set their sights a little bit lower and give somebody the role that you know, can perhaps flourish in it and do what they do what they need to do to kind of, you know, give the playing squad an overhaul. But you know, a lot of money's been spent on that squad, you know, seems to have been a bit wasteful in the way they've spent things. But it seems to be, you know, the case for these top clubs, and that seems to be all people talk about, is, you know, those top four or five clubs all the time. So with Mourinho in charge, it's going to continue. It'll be interesting to see how that relationship between the club and Mourinho goes between now and, well, whether he does get sacked. I mean, he needs he needs a recovery of sorts even after a poor start. But you know, they've got a player that's capable. But whether they want to do it is a different matter.
I think for me, the obvious person they need to target and who would be perfect for that job, sorry to say it, Kev, is Mauricio Pochettino. He's the guy that they should go for. And
is
he's
he?
Very
because
attainable.
Wouldn't they all complain that he's not a winner?
But I think he'd build that club back up. And I think with a budget behind him, what he's done with Spurs, he could probably go on and do better things with a bigger budget. And given the restrictions he has at Spurs, I think he would take that Man United job. I don't think he'd need to think about it. So that's what I would do.
I'd honestly be surprised if they came for him, considering this huge belief that he isn't a winner and can't win. That seems to pervade both the media and seemingly other boardrooms. I mean, I could be wrong. I agree with you. I think he could do a good job there, but it seems like everybody has eliminated them with their own logic.
I can see that, but I just think for me, he's the person they should be going for.
Yeah, it's a good shout. I think Pot should be going to Spain at some point after Spurs. I can't see him managing again over here. I think he'd be a Real Madrid manager within the next couple of years for sure, even sooner perhaps. But I don't think they seem to care whether managers have previous, you know, they've won a lot of things. They just seem to go with somebody who fits, and I think he'd fit at Real Madrid.
Well, it'll definitely be interesting to see if he does get one of those jobs without a few trophies on his belt first. Also, it should be noted that Manchester United won today, and this is still how everybody's feeling about the situation. Does not look like people think that he will be able to turn things around there or stick there very long at all. Another result today was Watford beating Tottenham. And all too often in the media, we hear kind of this narrative that, you know, it's more like the big club lost than the smaller one won. Worth noting that both of them were in the top four coming into this match anyway, so not sure that would have been an accurate narrative anyway. But last week, we talked about whether or not what Watford was doing was sustainable. We didn't really talk about what Watford were doing. So if you guys don't mind, what have you seen from Watford this year that you think they've kind of done this year that they did not do last year when they were like 12th in goals and 18th in goals conceded?
Well, I was in the championship last year, so I didn't watch as much of them as I had in the past. But what I've watched this season, I watched the Burnley match. And I watched a team that, even if Burnley scored, this team kept coming and kept coming and kept coming. It was a team that looked very determined to win the game. And I don't know if they had that type of togetherness last season. I really don't know. But this team seemed to all be on the same page and playing for each other. So maybe that sounds simplistic, but when I watched Burnley, I again, Burnley still had their opportunities, but when Watford had the chance to really take it to them, they did. So they were clinical, especially in the second half early on. So is it sustainable? I don't know, because I've seen teams go on winning streaks and then come back to earth. But this has been going on for a little bit now. It's four matches. Talk to me after eight matches, but I don't think that we should be criticizing them as a one-hit wonder until we give them some more matches underneath their belt, but they're doing something right. And I was impressed when I watched them against Burnley. But I'm here to say that at the same time of being impressed, I think Fulham can beat them. So I don't know what, you know, and again, maybe it's just one of these teams that finds ways to win, because they don't look intimidating. They don't look like that they're a team that can dominate you. They just win. So we'll see if that's sustainable.
For me, I just think the main thing about Watford is how physical they are. They've just got big players across the pitch. And I think that's it's very simplistic, but it just works sometimes, especially when you build up that momentum, which they seem to have done now. In football, momentum is one of the things talked about, but it can't be measured. But it does seem to have an impact. And I think that the win against Spurs today was very much a momentum one. Once they got the first goal, they believed, and then they continued pushing, and they got the second. But I just look at Watford, you know, they've got Decore and Kapoue in the middle of the pitch. They're just big physical players. You got Deeney and Gray, who are, you know, Deeney's a handful. No defender that goes up against him will have an easy game, and Gray is quick. Neither of them are great finishers, but they, you know, they're just a handful to defend against, and they will force mistakes, and I think that's been seen this season already. And Pereira seems to have picked up form. He's really looking very good this season. And the two fullbacks, Holibas and Yamat, get forward, and they give the service that the two forwards need. I just think it's very simplistic. There's nothing, you know, very tactical about what they're doing. They're just big, physical, strong, and they've just got a bit of technique in their team as well, with, you know, with Will Hughes, Pereira and Decore. I just think they've just got a good balance of technique and physicality. But the thing about Watford is, since they've come into the Premier League, they always start well. Under whichever manager they have, they will start well. And they will fall away. It just seems to be ingrained in their club's DNA. So, you know, they might go on and have a really good first half of the season, but in the second half, they're probably going to be dreadful, because that's just what happens. And this is the first time, I think, a manager at Watford has finished the season and started the next one. So, you know, he's done something right to keep his job this long. But it's just something about Watford that I just always see them as a team that are not going to go down. They're going to start well, and they're just going to stink the place out in the second half of the season. I just don't think that's going to change. But at the moment, everything has clicked, and they've got momentum, and I wouldn't want to be playing them anytime soon. And I think they're going to beat Manchester United in a couple of weeks' time, and that could be the end of Mourinho, as I was mentioning earlier. But I think, you know, what Watford have done well, they've just got big physical players, they know their game plan, and they've just got momentum. It's nothing complicated. It just works, I would be very happy to be a Watford fan at the moment, but like I said, I don't see them maintaining it for the long term.
Oh, do we have to mention Kapoue, really? I think you're right there, Jake, in that, you know, Watford are very organised. They're a big side. They're a physical side. Although I have to say that, you know, Palace did make them look a bit ordinary in the first half last weekend. You know, we missed a ton of chances and we should have been 2-0 up at half time. However, they had a better second half. We didn't turn up. And having played them already, you can see exactly how they get to win games, because if their game plan works, then it does. I'll be interested to see when that game plan doesn't work, because whether they got a plan B or whether, you know, I don't see they've got a huge amount of options off the bench. But Pereira is a fantastic player. He has been for a long time, and I think he's slowly, he's had a slow start in the Premier League. I think he had an injury in his first season, but you know, since he's started this season very well, probably a shining light. Will Hughes is another really good, talented player. The rest of the players really are there to, you know, to kind of, you know, impact on your opposition, you know, in their faces, and they play that, you know, close game, and that they get in people's faces, the opposition faces, and perhaps step them out like they did last week on Zaha, but let's not try and dwell on that too much. I think they've a fair play to Watford. They've done fantastically well. Forwards at a forward, nobody would have predicted that, let alone their own fans in those first four games. But again, it's already been mentioned that Watford always have a good start to the season and always are awful in the second half. It just reminds me a little bit of this season of, didn't Hull have a very, really good start a few years ago in the Premier League? And they were, they had a fantastic start. And as soon as they lost the game, they really struggled. So reaction to losing that first game will be interesting. I think it'd be telling as well in terms of, you know, whether they can kind of keep it going and kind of be a surprise package in the top six this season, perhaps. But I really don't see it, because I think if they lose one or two of those players from that starting lineup, as what happens during a season through whatever suspension or whether it's injury, they will probably struggle like most teams that are outside the top six if you lose one or two of their best players. But, you know, you can't knock them for getting four wins out of four and where they've gone about their business. They've got an effective game plan. They do their jobs very well. Every player knows their job. And they've made a couple of shrewd signings over the summer. I think Ben Foster is a very good goalkeeper, probably a bit short for my liking, but he seems to get in the way of everything pretty much. Like all goalkeepers, he's liable to an error or two, but I think he's, you know, reliable for the most part. So a few shrewd signings over the summer, just to add to what they already had. And I think they're a decent side, but again, I don't see them challenging, you know, the top six, seven places. I think they will fall away and end up as a, you know, bottom half of the table side later on. But they could surprise you. Never know.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they've improved as much as they've had with so a few additions, but as you mentioned, Ben Foster was terrific for them today, coming out and smothering a whole lot of stuff. We noticed with De Gea last week, when Lucas gets behind with a one-on-one, he does it so quickly, you don't really have time to react. But Foster actually reacted quicker than De Gea did last week and smothered one pretty early on. And had a few other opportunities that he kind of took care of before they became bigger issues. So he certainly has been an improvement on the combination of Aurelio Gomez and Karnezis. And wasn't there one more there last year? Who was the big dude that used to be at Sunderland?
Pantilimon.
Yeah. He was there as well. So Ben Foster certainly better than that batch. All right, and with these matches that we've talked about today being over, we are now heading into the international break after just 4 weeks of Premier League play. What do you think of the first international break happening so early in the season on the whole? And then for your individual clubs, has it come at a good or bad time?
It's interesting for Fulham. I'm not a big fan at all of the international break coming so early because we just started the season. But normally I would say it's coming at a bad time. But for Fulham's sake, I think it's actually coming at an excellent time because they are still learning the Premier League. And for them, they need to really do some work defending, and they need a lot of work. So for me, I think this is a good time to get back to training and figure out what's been going wrong, why they are continuing to look so poor in these mistakes that they're making, because they continue to make mistakes. So for me, this is the right time to get together and figure out the issues that they're having and fix them. Because moving forward, so early on, the style of play has been established. And I'm not concerned about them scoring goals. I'm not concerned about them going forward. The midfield and up front, not worried about it at all. I'm worried about the back four and also the goalkeeper. And till all of those players get on the same page, we'll see situations like we saw on Saturday, giving up two goals on mistakes. So for me, this is actually a very good time for Fulham.
Yeah, I think it's a good time for Newcastle as well. Just to tackle the question of the international break completely, I think they need to get the games in somewhere, and September seems to be a good time to sort of kick yourself back off after an international tournament. So I think it comes at a good time for that. I'm not one of those people that hates the international break. I quite like it. I quite like watching England, especially after what happened in the summer. I'm quite excited to see how we kick on after that World Cup. So I'm actually, you know, quite happy it's come now. For Newcastle, you know, we've had probably the worst fixtures of any team in the Premier League. And we rightly find ourselves in the bottom three after those games because they're tough games, and you're not gonna, you know, if you're gonna take anything from those games, you've done very well. And we didn't. We came close, but you know, it's fine. I think Shelby's injury's been a big one, so the fact we've got a couple of weeks to get him back fit is massive. It just gives Rafa a couple of weeks on the training ground with a lot of the new players as well. So I think it comes at a perfect time for us. So yeah, I have no complaints. I'm kind of quite happy I don't have to watch Newcastle play for the next 2 weeks, to be honest.
For Palace, yeah, I think it's the same. Get Will fit over the next 2 weeks. He's not included in the Ivory Coast squad, which was probably a little insight into ahead of yesterday's game, really. I think it's been a tough four games. I think we expected more points than we've actually got. You know, great win on opening day and then three defeats, which I think you could point at several different things for those few defeats. We're suffering through Luka Milivojevic, who was fantastic last season. Different player, started this season. Whether he still has the World Cup in his legs, perhaps, I don't know. And he's had a falling out with the Serbian coach, so he won't be on international duty. So I think, you know, there's a lot to be said for a break and back to training grounds. And, you know, there is a viewpoint that Roy seems to struggle with making the right substitutions. He's a real believer in the training ground routine and allowing those players that are included and been planning for that game for the weekend enough time to do what they need to do in a game to, you know, if it hasn't gone to plan, then get something back. So it didn't really work for us yesterday. And I think there's a lot of viewpoints in that players like Coyote came on and did exceptionally well yesterday for us, even though we lost. And Max Meyer for starting slots in that midfield, particularly while Luca's struggling. So there's a lot to think about. Probably regroup after these four games and think about, you know, exactly where we are and what points we have definitely missed out on, because I think we should be on more points than three. I think we've played some decent stuff, but we've been a bit foolish in different games along the way. So, but you know, no game is easy in the Premier League. It doesn't matter who you're playing. So, you know, we just need to, you know, get our heads back up again and go again with Huddersfield away after the international break. So, yeah, it's come at a good time for us, I think.
All right, interesting stuff from all of you. Now we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with questions for each of our guests regarding their clubs.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, and we are back. Russ, we'll start with you. Sure. I came on and did a segment with you before the Tottenham match, wherein you mentioned that you had heard us talking about Fulham summer and the concerns that the squad chemistry might not be there because of how many players you brought in over the summer. Just curious if you'd be willing to update us on how that's gone forward. Have they started to play together more as a unit, or is it still a little individual at times?
They are playing together as a unit, but the issue that Fulham are having, as I mentioned prior, is really about the defense. And Savica Jokanović has not settled on a starting 11. And we've been talking about on Cottage Talk, and other Fulham supporters have been talking about this. Is he really just looking for his best starting 11 and just hasn't found it yet? Or is it about the opponent and he's just matching up against the opponent because he has different options now at pretty much each position? So I think the issue Fulham are having, I guess we could say gelling together, is really, for me, about the defense, because he's been changing it so much. There hasn't been a back four that has played together right now. They keep changing it. Now, Alfie Mawson just came back, so that's a factor in it. They started with Fabry as goalkeeper, and then they've gone to Marcus Badinelli, and things have just continued to change, mix and match. Joe Bryan started the first three matches at left back. He decides to go with Le Marchand at left back against Brighton Hove Albion. We think it was tactical because he was a taller left back and they were concerned about the crosses in the box. So what I think is going on is that, one, I think Savica is learning what he has and what he doesn't have. But I also think he's thinking more about how to play against the opposition instead of just going out with a normal starting 11 each and every week. I think he's really using his entire squad right now, which is good. But when you're talking about gelling, I think that's a work in progress, partially because of all the mixing and matching. Not as much in the midfield, certainly not up front where you have Mitrovic, I guess, in a 4-3-3 right now. The last two matches, he's gone with Vieto and also Schürrle. So Schürrle came back after the Tottenham match. But again, there have been all these changes. And then there's been talk because the last two matches, Ryan Sessegnon has not started and has come off the bench in both of these matches. So it seems like to me that Jokanović is just figuring out what he has and what he doesn't have. So I'm not overly concerned because I see what's going on. I can see the style of play being cemented. I just think it's a matter of time, and I'm hoping that the defense will catch up with what's going on offensively, because what's going on offensively is only going to get better. It's the defense that has us all concerned, because it's nowhere near where it needs to be in the Premier League.
Yeah, you mentioned the attack there. Alexander Mitrovic, 4 goals in 4 games, makes him top of the heap along with Sadio Mane for the highest goal scorers in the league right now. How important has he been to your side thus far, and how well do you think he could perform throughout the season?
I think he's been massive. And, you know, listen, last season he was really, honestly, the missing piece, because once we got Mitrovic, everything clicked, along with Matt Target as a left back, but it was really more to do with Mitrovic scoring the goals. But what's interesting about watching him this season compared to last season, because I know that there are questions about can he score consistently in the Premier League, the biggest indicator I got, forget about the goals, is what opportunities he continues to create. And all of the center backs that he goes up against, he can handle so far, including Tottenham's, which I highly respect. And he is just continues to be a menace. And the best way I can put it is that he can score all different types of goals, but the work rate is something that, again, has been phenomenal. And the match against Brighton Hove Albion really showed that, because there was a long kick out to him. And Lewis Dunk is considered a very good center back for Brighton Hove Albion. And basically, he toyed with him, got around him, just put his hand on his back. And next thing you know, Mitrovic has the ball, shoots, gets his own rebound, and scores. And that was, again, a goal that Mitrovic can score. But he can also score a really style, a real striker's goal. So it can be different types of goals. But it's his impact, bringing his teammates in. You know, again, it's not just about him. He wants to win. So his impact, I think, is as big as probably Seri. Seri's probably second at this point. Mitrovic, I think, has been bigger because he's scoring the goals and his teammates are all part of it, too.
All right. And then coming to you now, Jake, there was a huge story last week about Lascelles being dropped before the Chelsea match. Obviously, your club captain, which surprised some at the time due to his age. Have there been any updates on the situation, whether or not there was a falling out or if it was a tactical thing?
I think it's just one of those things that happens. I think he, basically what I gather from the situation is that he wanted to play in the middle of a back three, and Benitez wanted him on the right side, and he sort of kicked up a fuss, and there was a bit of an argument between him and Matt Ritchie. But these things happen at football clubs all the time. You get heated discussions, you get arguments about little things, and things get tense, and they often, you know, it brings the score closer together. We had it last year of Diarmé. I think Lascelles and Diarmé got in a bit of a punch up at Diarmé became one of the best central midfielders in the league during the season. So it's just one of those things that happens. He was back in the team yesterday, and I don't think there's a lot to talk about. I think he disagreed with something. He got dropped. He got put in his place, and he came back as captain the next game. Made a mistake for the first City goal, but improved after that. And I don't think there's a lot to worry about with Lascelles. I think he's going to be fine. He's going to come back into the team, and we should forget about this. I think it's been overly written, and I think the problem with Newcastle United at the moment is the media seem to be looking for any small angle to go at Benitez. There seems to be a big PR, and you know, I don't want to talk about conspiracy theories, but there does seem to be a big PR drive coming out of Mike Ashley that people are just defending him. You see Richard Keys and Andy Gray coming out with some ludicrous things over in Abu Dhabi. You have Rio Ferdinand, who has links to Sports Direct, defending him on BT yesterday. It's Dennis Wise, who was once employed by Mike Ashley at Newcastle, on Sky, defending Mike Ashley to the hilt and saying that Benitez should be doing better. And, you know, he knows that it's ridiculous. I think I'm just bored of it. And I think this Lascelles thing is another example that they're just trying to undermine Benitez. And I don't understand why that is, because there's only one person in the right at Newcastle at the moment, and that is Benitez. I'm just bored of it. If any Newcastle story, if you just keep an eye out for it, there are angles of people defending Mike Ashley, and BT had quite a good debate on it yesterday, despite the fact that Richard Dunn and Rio Ferdinand were talking nonsense. I think Richard Dunn at one point said, well, there's no point investing any money because you're not going to get any higher than ninth or eighth. What's the point of being a football club if you can't have ambition to challenge higher than that? You know, Leicester won the league. Everton have got into the top six before. Watford are doing well at the moment. You know, Burnley did well last season. It's stupid. There's a lot of people spending my cash and just bored of it. But the main thing that came out of that is that since we've been promoted, I think Brighton have spent over 100 million net spend. Huddersfield are around 80 million net spend. Do you know what Newcastle's was, Kev? 1 million net spend.
Wow.
Ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And we get all this criticism about our style of play against the top teams. Last year, I think no team took more points against the top six than Newcastle. I know, especially the case in home games. I'm not sure. I think we did pretty bad on the road, but especially in home games, no teams took more points in the top six than Newcastle. We've played Manchester City, we've played Chelsea, we've played Tottenham. We've lost 2-1 in each of those games. A lot of teams are going to do worse than that, especially at the Etihad. I'd be surprised if many teams can see two or fewer at the Etihad, and we did that yesterday. Yes, it's not great to watch, but it's difficult to defend. Defending is not an easy skill. Ross was talking about it with Fulham. They're struggling. Newcastle can defend. Look at the last two games against Chelsea. We conceded a penalty which shouldn't have been given, albeit it was a stupid tackle, and an own goal. Yesterday, we conceded yesterday against Manchester City? An excellent strike from Sterling and an absolute ridiculous goal from Kyle Walker. We don't concede many goals. We don't get cut open very often. And Benitez knows this is the way to get points. And I'm just bored of all the criticism of Benitez. I've really gone on from this Lascelles point, but I just wanted to get in there just how ridiculous it's been at the moment. I think we've done very well. I think, you know, we're unlucky to have only 1 point. I think we probably could have got some from the Spurs game. Could have got some from the Chelsea game, could have even got some out of yesterday, and we probably should have beaten Cardiff. 1 point is probably a harsh reflection, but the style of play that Benitez goes for means that there's these tight margins, and we will come out on the wrong side of those at times, as we have in these first four games. But I'm certain over the next 10, 20 games, we're going to come out on the right side of those tight margins more often than not, and I think we're going to be absolutely fine because he's a good manager. But all this media stuff is just boring.
Jake, I want to comment on all this. First of all, I agree with you with all the stuff coming up about Rafa Benitez. I think it's unfair. I think there's obviously a media campaign against him to protect Ashley for whatever reason. And I think it's harmful to your club. I think it's, let me just say, BS. So I understand where you're going on that. What you talked about, though, in regards to how you guys have been playing. And again, I know how Benitez plays. He knows how to win. And you brought up a wonderful point. This is the reason why I wanted to comment on it. Fulham's next match is against Manchester City. We can't do what Newcastle United just did. Keep it close like that. We can't do that. We have one style of play, and that's to attack, and they're going to have to adjust when they go to the Etihad. I don't know how it's going to be, but I give you guys credit for going there and making it tough on Manchester City. That's not an easy feat, and like you said, the other matches as well. And with all this negativity, it's too bad because you do have a great club, a rich tradition, and the fans don't deserve this. And I have no idea why they're pointing the fingers at Benitez when they should be pointing it at the owner. It makes no sense to me.
No, I completely agree. I think it's ridiculous. And one thing I will comment on our style of play. Yes, I think we've averaged some like 20% possession in the last two matches against Chelsea and Man City, which isn't great. But I think Benitez came out saying that possession is just a stat for TV, which is pretty true at the end of it. It's not important. There's more than one way to skid a cat, and the way we play isn't great, but it does work. But it's worth noting we haven't had John Joshoey for the last two games. And in the first two games against Cardiff and Tottenham, he completed 7 key passes. Key, who's coming to replace him in the last two games, has completed 1 key pass. And the thing with Shelby is that he gets us up the field. He can release our quick players. He can provide respite on the defence. He can open up, you know, even the best teams in this league. And you know, with Shelby on the pitch, we would be doing better. We'd be creating more. We'd be showing a little bit more positivity. Against Tottenham, we had about 40% possession, which, you know, still not great, but it's a massive difference. And we had as many shots as Tottenham during that game. And I think, Kev, you'll admit in that second half, Newcastle were probably the better team. Yeah. And I think Shelby has just been a massive miss that has been completely disregarded by the media. With him, it would be more of the same style, but we'd be showing more of an intent. We'd be further off the pitch. We'd be creating more. So I think he's been a massive miss as well. And the fact that we've managed to, you know, only lose by the odd goal in two against two of the better teams. Two teams who are unbeaten, may I add, Chelsea and Manchester City. So the fact we've done that without Shelvey, I think, is quite impressive, and it shows how good Benitez is at sort of innovating. He moved to a three at the back, and he changed the style, and it worked to an extent. In each of those games as well, we went 1-0 down and we got back level. So I think that's a good trait to have, and one that Newcastle teams haven't had before Benitez came. So I think we were only on 1 point, yes, but I think we've had tough games, and I think we're going to be fine. Benitez knows how to pick his battles. He knows which games to target, and I have no doubt against Arsenal, I think it's our next game at home, mm-hmm. I have no doubt we're going to be a lot more offensive in that game, and I wouldn't be surprised if we got something. That's a completely different game. They're a team that we can go at. They're a team that we can get in behind. I think that's going to be a different game, and I wouldn't be surprised if we get something. But it's not been a great start, but I just think it's ridiculous that Benitez is getting any sort of criticism at all. Yes, it's okay to pick flaws in some of the things he does, and I don't agree with everything that he does, but some of the stuff that's out there at the moment is just ridiculous.
What did you make of the approach to the cup tie?
I mean, it disappointed me.
I wasn't trying to like counter you hard there or anything, but just you've been saying very positive things, but I saw a lot of Newcastle people very frustrated with how it was handled.
But I don't think we'll ever going to go deep in that cup in a cup competition. I don't think we've got the squad for it. I was disappointed how it went, but I think he had Kennedy on the pitch. Rondon came on. Fernandez played. We had some good players on the pitch, Key as well. He played. I just think it's one of the things that it's a. I think Benitez used that game. I don't think he really cared about going out of that competition. I think he used that as a sort of a message saying, "Look, I don't have the squad to do this, so I'm not gonna put my strongest team out, and I'm not gonna care about going out." And he probably wanted to win the game, but I don't think he's gonna lose too much sleep about going out either. Mm-hmm. But the problem with that is Mike Ashley also doesn't really care about going out of the cup, so it really does little for either of their causes. Yeah. The stuff that's come out recently about how Mike Ashley's didn't release any money to Benitez because he didn't get invited to the training ground. It's just petty. It's ridiculous. I'm just getting bored of this. And the moment Benitez leaves, which he will before July, he's going to leave before then. That's probably when I'm just going to stop getting that sensitive about stuff going on with Newcastle until Mike Ashley leaves, because I'm just reaching my end with it, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, it'll certainly be interesting to see if he does sell, because the past two times it's looked like he was actually willing to. He ended up not doing it anyway. So hopefully there is some fan reprieve there for Newcastle soon. Coming to you now, Jay. Man, we're just kind of hammering this kind of negative tone. What is this, the DC universe? Anyway, Crystal Palace failed to pick up points without Zaha on the pitch again, continuing the trend from last season where you didn't pick up a single point when Zaha wasn't playing. I'm sure you're very tired of this narrative the same way Jake is with the Benitez one. But it can't be coincidence at this point anymore, right?
No, you're right. You're completely right. So bored of it, just like we were bored of how many people went on about our poor start of our season. Thankfully, that's not us just this season. It's a true statistic, and you know they don't lie. We struggle without Wilf in the side, and whether it's got to a point now that you know the rest of the team actually lead Wilf around. I think that much is clear. We had to look. Look at the game yesterday. We were unlucky in parts, to be fair. You know, the amount of times we had chances in front of goal, there was a scrambling in front of the net where probably 9 times out of 10 that ball would find its way out of our line, and you know, Sampson threw everything at it. It just wasn't going for us. And we don't help ourselves really, because you know, we've got a good enough squad of players. Wilf is great. He's fantastic. He's our best player, and you know he really does make a difference for us as we've seen. But we can't keep relying on him, because at one point he won't be at the club. I know he's signed a new 5-year deal, which is fantastic for us. But that doesn't mean say he won't leave next summer. I'm not foolish to think that you know he signs a 5-year deal and he's going to be here for another 5 years. If we don't have Wilf, that's a worry. A lot of people were worried that we wouldn't have Kabay. We struggle without Kabay, and some of that to a certain extent is true this season. But the stat without Wilf is incredible. Like I say, we haven't helped ourselves because we've got a good enough squad of players. It's a bit of a hoodoo now, really, because every time you know we lose Wilf, and do you know what? Before the game yesterday, it was visible among the fans in that there was a lot of rumours going around before 2 o'clock that obviously Wilf hadn't been called up by the Ivory Coast squad, and there was a rumour done around that he'd been injured, and a lot of people obviously pointing at the Kapuei challenge and this and the other, and without having the true facts. But as it turned out, it was a groin strain they pulled in training during the week, and Roy was very hesitant to talk about injuries in his pre-match press conference, so whether it was touch and go, whether he was going to play or not. But I think Southampton probably looked at a team sheet and thought very similar. You know, it's a statistic now, which is true. Southampton would have been all too well aware of that without Wilf in the side. And you can see it yesterday that, you know, Wilf, when he plays, he has two or three players on him for a lot of the game. You know, and he still managed to get through them because he is that good. But yesterday, the rest of the team struggled because, you know, they didn't have that diversion. You know, the opposition didn't have two or three players focused on Wilf, and they were able to, you know, pick up their players as you would normally expect. And Townsend didn't have the freedom that he so often has because Wilf is being man-marked so heavily. And, it does create a problem for us. And, you know, we do need to find a way of getting past that the next time Wilf isn't available for us. And I think we were a little bit naive yesterday because we played a kind of 4-4-2 formation with Ayew playing alongside Benteke. I think that, you know, Wilf does drop, you know, off of Benteke. He doesn't play that, he doesn't lead the line as such as a striker. He plays that role kind of floating around as a striker. He still goes out wide. He still drops deep to get the ball. Whereas Jordan Ayew was a little bit different yesterday, and I think our midfield struggled without having the release of being able to give the ball to somebody like Wilf, who will just be a magnet for the other defenders and trick them into making a challenge and getting a free kick or actually getting past them and making up some ground, which, yeah, it's something we really missed. But it was a combination yesterday. It wasn't just Wilf. We were missing James Tompkins from the back as well. But, yeah, it's a fair point. It's a really boring stat, and we're fed up of hearing it, but we don't help ourselves because we just continue not to win without Wilf on the side.
Yeah, I fully understand both sides of that you're probably very tired of it, and it's up to you guys to break it, and they aren't.
It is.
That must be equally frustrating. At the other end of the pitch, Wayne Hennessy continues to make his saves. Looks like he's averaging about 4 per game this season, but you have now conceded 2 goals in a row. Are we any closer to the Guaita era, or do you think it would take something far more than that for Hennessy to be dropped?
Oh, the Wayne Hennessy problem. To be fair, he started the season well. We've had a summer with a very good keeper in Vicente Gaeta coming to the club, had a very good name in the Liga. And it was a bit of a coup for us to get him, actually, because I think there was a number of clubs actually interested in getting him. I think Barcelona made an inquiry during the summer, even though we'd actually signed him on a pre-contract agreement from the 1st of July after just missing out on him in January. The fact is, Hennessy hasn't really had the one jersey for a few seasons now. We had Steve Mandanda that came in, and we all know how that worked out. He came in, was given a number one jersey from the start, and again, like I say, it didn't work out for whatever reason. He got homesick and didn't play another game after those first, I think he had 8 appearances, 6 appearances, something like that. So maybe we're being a bit careful with Gaeta. I know there's a communication problem. He didn't speak any English when he came over. So whether that's an issue, but the fact is, you know, yesterday was a great example of what we get from Wayne Hennessy. You know, he's one of those goalkeepers. I expect the goalkeepers to be very vocal, very loud, and I think that's just a trait of most goalkeepers, and you expect that from him. Wayne isn't that kind of goalkeeper. You don't see him shouting and moaning at defenders very often at all. Yesterday, made a very good save for the penalty. Give him his due for that, because, you know, goalkeepers and penalties, you know, if they make a save, they're a hero. If I don't save it, then it's, you know, well, you know, it's a player that made a foul or the referee giving a penalty in the first place. But I think he's at fault for the second goal, because you could see it coming from a mile off. He's coming out of his area. Coyote's actually got his way back to Holbier. And Hennessy was in no man's land. And Coyote could see it from a distance because he was moving his hand, waving Hennessy back as such, as he's still running, getting around the player and saying, you know, if you come out that far, he's going to slot it past you. And that's exactly what it did. And that one game kind of says everything about what you get Wayne Hennessy. Made a good save for the penalty. It was a poor penalty, admittedly, from Charlie Austin, but he made the save, and you give him credit for that. But on the flip side, you know, the second goal, which, you know, wasn't really, I mean, that was late in the game. We're chasing the game anyway, but that's kind of what he does. You know, he doesn't come off his line. And when he does come off his line, he's made the wrong decision. So in terms of when Gaeta is going to come in, yeah, I don't know whether Roy... It's difficult to know how Roy will view that. Personally, I think after the international break, it might be controversial, but I would start Gaeta. Again, don't know what the... you know, why they're actually holding him back other than the language barrier. But, you know, he wouldn't be the first to come to a country without being able to speak the language. You know, football's a universal language, isn't it? So I know, you know, you can communicate, surely, with your back line to a certain point if you can't speak the language. He played against Swansea in the week and had a good run out. So, yeah, I see no reason why we can't start him against Huddersfield. Because, I mean, even the fifth game of the season, that's an important trip away to Huddersfield this season. And we could do with getting the points in that one, really. And it sounds ludicrous to say that now, but, you know, it's a dog-eat-dog world in the Premier League. You need to get all the points you can at certain points in the season, and we need to get back on that, you know, winning trail again. So I want to see Gaeta in a number one shirt. A lot of Palace fans, we've been quite split down the middle, really, in terms of Wayne Hennessy and goalkeepers. And I think, for the most part, we've probably had a gutful of him. And, you know, he's done well in places, but I think we need a change, to be fair. I really do. I think we need a change at the back. It will help the defence as well to have a louder keeper, even if he is talking a different language. But, and obviously Tompkins not being there didn't help yesterday. But I think Gaeta, it's going to come at some point. So why delay it?
Fair enough. All excellent points from you guys regarding your clubs. And now we're going to head into player watch, where with the summer windows now shut all throughout Europe, what player are you surprised is still at your club?
Well, mine's going to be a surprise to you guys, because you're probably going to think I'm going to say Ryan Sessegnon or Tom Kearney. I'm actually going to say Marcus Bettinelli. And that's going to sound strange considering he has started the last two matches. But they brought in two goalkeepers. They brought in Sergio Rico and they brought in Fabri. And I only think they bring them both in to take the place of Marcus Bettinelli. Somehow Marcus Bettinelli, to his credit, has now come back to become the starting goalkeeper. So this has been a little bit of a head scratcher. But again, he hasn't played badly, but I'm still wondering, why would you invest in two goalkeepers and keep Marcus Bettinelli? So Marcus Bettinelli is the sharker for me. And as long as it motivates him and he plays well, so be it. But I did not see that coming. I expected them to hold on to Sessegnon and Kearney. So that's why when I saw this topic, I really had to think about it a little bit. So I'm going to go with Marcus Bettinelli.
Yeah, I don't. It's a difficult one for Newcastle, because we're very good at getting rid of players, and we pretty much got rid of every player that we should have got rid of. Probably argue that we've lost players that we perhaps shouldn't have, and we haven't upgraded properly with Mitrovic and Gale going. But probably the one that is still at the club that is only at the club because nobody else wants him is Ashraf Lazar. He's a left back. Last year he was on loan at Benevento. Didn't really do well there, and he's back with Newcastle in it. I don't think he's going to play at all. I think we've been trying to offload him to any sort of foreign club that will listen, and nobody wanted him. So he's still here, and the fact he didn't even play in the cup match, and we played Kieran Clarke, who looked like the most uncomfortable player at left back ever. At left back, you know, probably means he's not going to play for Newcastle either. So he's probably the one I'm surprised at, and he's probably going to be another one of those like Cisco players that we had a few years ago that just forever in our reserves doing nothing, but we can't get rid of them because we bought them on too high wages and nobody wants them. So yeah, he's probably going to be here a while, but he's probably the one player that we didn't get rid of that we perhaps wanted to.
Yeah, good question. I think everybody probably expected Wilf to go in the summer. I think we were kind of resigned to it. So in the end, it was a case of like a new signing, really, celebrating. Obviously, he signed a new deal as well. I think everybody was resigned to losing Wilf in the summer, or most people anyway, to get potentially another season out of him, as it's turned out, and maybe even more than that, is actually fantastic. Some people have questioned his lack of motivation for for winning things and things like that. But I think it's a bit of fresh air that he wants to stay at a club. You know, he's had his fingers burnt by going to United. Even though that was a few years ago, he's come back to Palace and he's playing the best football of his life. And we're, you know, we're paying, we're seeing the dividends of that, really. And you know, whether he maybe, I think he's a player that is a confidence player, and he would need to feel loved at a club, and whether he would have that at a larger club, I don't know. You know, like a big fish in a small pond scenario, like he is at Palace. He knows the fans adore him, and you know, same for pretty much the club. So we've got rid of a few fringe players, which, you know, we're a bit different to Newcastle. We don't seem to be able to get rid of players that we want to get rid of. We tend to lose the players that we want to keep a lot of the time. But we've kind of freed up a lot of our fringe players, and it's given the opportunity for a few highly rated youngsters we've got who actually signed pro contracts in the summer. So we may see some of them come through. Obviously, you know, Aaron Wan-Bissaka is a real shining light for a lot of those academy players, and look up towards him and think, actually, if I get a chance like him, then they're going to take it with both hands. We've got Naya Kirby, who is a regular with the under-19 England squad, central midfielder, and looking for that that break. And, you know, like Aaron did last year, he had a fantastic chance during our horrific run of injuries. And I certainly don't want that to happen again, a run of injuries, but it'd be great to see another youth player come through, because, you know, I think a lot of time we've been foolish in keeping some players on the bench who aren't really going to get game time. We're paying them a large sum of money at the expense of some of the youngsters, which I think can probably be said for a lot of clubs in the Premier League. So, yeah, for me, it was Wilf surprised to keep, because I thought he was going to go. But it's good to get rid of a few fringe players as well. So, yeah, Wilf for me.
All right, well, this is where we usually do match previews, but as we mentioned before, we are heading into the international break, so no need for that. So we will just wrap up now. If there's anything you'd like to tell folks you're working on or want to tell them where they can reach you, now would be a good time.
Okay, well, again, my name is Russ Gold, the host of Cottage Talk, and you can follow me on Twitter at Russ_Goldman, and also at the show's Twitter account, which is Cottage Talk. We do three different, I guess you could say, post-match shows. I do Cottage Talk full-time, which is an initial reaction to the result. Then we do a full post-match show, and now I'm also doing a player rating show. So each match has three shows attached to it to review the match, which is actually very interesting because we look at it in three different ways. So if you're interested in learning a little bit more about Fulham and also who Fulham play, check out Cottage Talk.
Yeah, thanks for listening. You can get me on Twitter at Jake Jackman with two N's. I write for the Boot Room and EPL Index.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again, Kev. It's been enjoyable, even though it's kind of therapy talking about a loss anyway. You can get to, I'm editor of the Eagle Speak. We're on Twitter at the Eagle Speak, and also the website, the Eagle Speak. Plenty of content going online. Oh, it's been a really busy couple of weeks, actually, and we'll have some more stuff going online during the week. So we're interact with us on Twitter, which we're mostly on Facebook and Instagram as well. And also I'm co-host and producer of a local community radio show. It's a Meridian Sports Show. We've got a busy show on Tuesday. Issues are coming up. We've got the local non-league team manager coming on the show with one of his players. And also with the UK Elite Ice Hockey League starting this weekend, we've got one of the Guildford Flames players coming on as well. So just check out everything on our Twitter feed, which is at the Meridian SS, and you can get us online if you fancy tuning in.
Yeah, and I'm your host, Kevin DeVries. You didn't have to hear me talk about Tottenham too much today, so consider yourselves blessed. I'm on Twitter at Kevroff. You can find the show at EPL Roundtable. Also check out the Championship Roundtable, which is at Championship Pod, and the FPL Roundtable, which doesn't have its own Twitter for some reason. I don't know. But check both of those out. There will be a championship show up today as you're listening to this. So be sure to check that out. There will probably be a fantasy show this week if we can line things up, where we can discuss wildcard usage, because that seems to be the direction everybody's going. I also write fantasy articles over at goal.com under the gaming tab, so check that out if that tickles your fancy as well. Guys, thanks so much for joining me. It was a pleasure as always, and at home, we hope you keep listening.